Have you ever wondered what it looks like to be a follower of Jesus? How would you describe it to someone? The disciples have been following Jesus around for 3 years now, at this point in John. They've literally been following him around, watching what he does, seeing his actions, learning his priorities, hearing his words, and trying to be like Jesus themselves, being sent out to try and then come back and discuss and find out more about what it means. And they've been trying to follow Jesus. But now Jesus is telling them that he's going to be leaving and they can't come. And they're getting anxious and confused. And so Jesus gives them this picture of what it's going to be like to follow Jesus. And he says, it looks like being a vine. To first century Jews, I'm a teacher, that's why I said first year, coming to that later on. For first century Jews, that would have meant something to them. But for us, that's not an image that immediately sparks thoughts and ideas. So we're going to take a little bit of time to unpack that. But for them, they knew what that meant, and Jesus is about to upend their understanding of what a vine was. So we're going to look at what that image was. But we're mainly going to be looking at what it means to be in the vine, to be pruned and not removed, to be remaining, to be loving and fruiting. That's where we're heading today. So let's start with verse 1. You may have noticed we're reading from the NIV just because it has slightly simpler language to help us with this. ESV says the same things using some different words. We'll talk about that. But verse 1 says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. How many people have seen, got a vineyard in their back garden? Seen a vine? It's not something I was that familiar with, but it's got this thick stem in the middle, and then it spreads out. And then if you leave it untrained, it's got branches higgledy-piggledy all over the place, just growing everywhere. But if you train it and you prune it, you get stems and branches that are coming out nice and straight, spaced apart, so every part can get leaves to get the sunlight, to get the sugar into those beautiful grapes that are going to be hanging from it. And the disciples would have known what a vine was and how it grew and how it needed to be tended to make it produce the most fruit. But they also would have known something else about what the vine represented. And just like Jesus took the Passover that they were familiar with and he hijacked that image for his own purpose, he was going to do the same thing with the vine. So I want you to turn to, we're going to be skipping about a little bit, but I want you to turn to Isaiah 5 for a minute, if you can do that. There's Bibles at the back if you want to grab those or flip on your phone. And then we'll head back to John 15. Isaiah 5, verse 7 says, the vineyard of the Lord Almighty is the nation of Israel, and the people of Judah and the vines he delights in. So the vine or the vineyard represented the people of Israel, God's chosen people. And their role as being that people was to be the representative of God to the world. That was the role of being the vine. Even from the earliest days when we heard about Abraham and his family, even from the earliest days, they were to be a blessing to the nation. Genesis 12 says, all the people on earth will be blessed through you, through them. And any Israelite hearing about a vine would have been immediately thinking about themselves, the true children of God. But it had become a badge of belonging rather than about their purpose to look outwards and to bear fruit for everyone else. It turns sour. Literally, if we could look at verse 5, verse 2 in Isaiah 5. The father had dug up the land, he had built a watchtower, he cut out a wine press, he looked for a good crop of fruits, of grapes, but it yielded only bad fruit. Second half of verse 7 that we read. He looked for justice, but only saw bloodshed. For righteousness, but he only heard distress. See, the Israelites were meant to be like good grapes. They were meant to represent God to the world around him. But now, they had just become, by what they were doing and their attitudes and their actions, had just become sour grapes. So Jesus was now upcycling this image, and he was saying, I am the true vine. Let's flip back to John 15. We're going to stay there for most of the rest of the morning. Jesus said, I am the true vine, the true representative of God to the world. You might know the verses in Colossians that say he was the image of the invisible God. Or 2 weeks ago in John, Jesus was saying, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And unlike the Israelites, Jesus' fruit was beautiful. He radiated love and compassion and mercy. He was welcoming into outsiders. He was forgiving. And even before his death, he was standing as the go-between between God and humans who needed that relationship with him. So Jesus was the true vine, the real thing. And that could seem enough, couldn't it? Look at Jesus, believe in him, and just sit back and eat the grapes and wait for heaven. Is that what being a disciple is about? No. See, Jesus is the vine, but then he carried on. He started talking to the disciples about you. You are going to bear fruit. You are in the vine. Let's look at verse 5. I am the vine, and you are the branches. Human beings are back in the picture of being in the vine, of being God's representative to the whole world. So for the rest of the morning, we're going to look at what it means to be in the vine. Jesus was talking to his disciples. A couple of chapters in time, we're going to find out that he was thinking about us too. So, what does it mean to be a branch? As I alluded to a second ago, as I fall over the back step, I'm a teacher. And as you know, teachers don't get very far into their lesson before they start asking questions. So I'm about to start asking questions. Don't panic. I'm not going to pick on anybody, Matthew. And you don't have to put your hand up before you shout out, okay? However, easy question. I'm going to give you the answer as well. Have a look at verse 5. And there's a big clue in verse 2. Question is, what is a branch for? Anybody can shout out the answer. What is the branch for? To bear fruit. Thank you very much, first row. My teacher's pet in the front row. Okay. So, next questions. Branch's purpose is to bear fruit. So, a little quiz here. I want you to tell me what sort of tree these fruit come from. Orange tree, good. Apple tree, yep. Pear tree. Good, well done. Just checking you're still awake. Okay, so we don't call it a vine, a grape tree, but we call it a vine. But the point of that is to show that the type of fruit that you get shows what type of tree you are. Okay, and that's the point of fruit. And when Jesus says we're going to be in the vine and be producing fruit, the point is our fruit is to show what sort of vine, what sort of plant we're attached to. So we're going to think about fruit a little bit more later, but just for just now, we need to keep this in our mind as we go through. So I'm going to break some grammar rules here, and I'm going to say our fruit shows us how Jesus-y we are. Okay? How like Jesus are you? Or am I? We'll come back to that at the end, but just remember, how Jesus-y are we? Okay, let's go back to the passage. Continue verse 1, verse 2 onwards. And Jesus starts by talking about the vine, by what bits get broken off. I am the true vine, my Father is the gardener, and he cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit. Verse 6, I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. It's picked up, branches are picked up and thrown into the fire to be burned. So Jesus is still reconstructing this image from being the original chosen people of God to being Jesus the vine with branches included. And not everyone that was in that original people of God by birth or tradition remained in the vine. What was the criteria? It was Jesusiness, following Jesus. And some of those branches were removed because they weren't like Jesus. But it also seems that Jesus was thinking about people who removed themselves from the vine. You know, just the same evening, probably half an hour before Jesus said this, Judas had just walked out into the night. We don't read a lot about him in earlier passages, but we don't see much fruit there of Jesusiness. He was stealing the money. He didn't care for those that were worshiping Jesus. He didn't get it. And perhaps because he didn't think Jesus matched up to what the Messiah was supposed to be, he left and decided to betray Jesus. But for someone looking in, casual glance, he would have been just like the other disciples. He would have looked like a disciple. He was one of the original 12, wasn't he? And he followed Jesus about. And it's possible for us to look like disciples. We come to church, we grow up in a Christian family, we perhaps go through some of the rituals, but not have that living connection with Jesus. And in time, we take ourselves away and don't produce any fruit, being only as useful as fuel on a fireplace. And these are sobering thoughts, aren't they? It's judgment language, isn't it? And we don't speak about that very often. And as we read this bit of the passage, we can be fearful for ourselves or for friends, our family that we love. So just for a moment, we're going to think a little bit, have a few more thoughts before we move on. Firstly, who is the gardener? The Father is the gardener. He's in charge. He's in charge. It really does matter that we produce fruit. Are we letting Jesus' life into our lives to change us? The gardener is not only a pruner. The Father is not only a pruner, but he is also an excellent grafter. Grafting is where you take branches and you carefully add them into the stem of the tree so that they get the lifeblood from the tree and can live on and produce fruit. And in a slight variation in the vine metaphor, Paul goes on about olive trees. Romans 11 says, but if some of the branches were broken off, you, although wild olive shoots, he's talking about the Gentiles, you and I, for most of us, were grafted in amongst the others, now to share the nourishing root of the olive tree. So yes, God does remove branches, but he's also an excellent grafter to bring people like you and I into the vine. And finally, if you feel that you're failing and you're just producing little tiny grapes and you're ripe for the chop, just remember Jesus may have been thinking of Judas here, but in the same breath he talked about Judas betraying him, he talked about Peter denying him. Peter remained on the vine, forgiven, pruned, and produced abundant fruit. So we come to the next bit, which is pruning. Okay, so remember that the vine is to represent God to the people, everyone. And the job of branches is to produce fruit, Okay? So let's read how we produce fruit. So, verse 2 and 3. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit. And while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean. Clean is a kind of wordplay on pruning, just the way the language works. It also makes you think back to that foot washing experience. You are already cleaned. You're already pruned because of the word I have spoken in you. So the Father is the gardener, not content just to leave us branches growing haphazardly any which way, but he wants to shape us into this shape so that we can produce fruit the way he intended. Our culture, if you listen to what people say on the telly and friends and teachers say, you're wonderful just the way you are. Have you heard that? Heard people talk about that? But it's not quite right, is it? Someone else said, perhaps a little closer, God loves you just the way you are, but he loves us enough not to leave us the way you are. He wants to shape us. And are we willing to remain in him so he can do that? So, how does God shape us into the people he wants us to be? If we'd not read that passage just now, what would your answer be? How does God shape us? How does he change us, prune us? I'm not going to ask you, but I guess a lot of us would say through trials, difficult times, that's the sort of thing that jumps to our mind here, isn't it? Yeah? But it's not. And there is plenty of places in the Bible that is the teaching, isn't it? Paul, James, Proverbs. But that's not what Jesus says here. Have a look. I am going to ask you this time. Verse 3. What does it say in verse 3 about how the disciples were pruned or cleaned? Anyone? Through the word, through Jesus' words. And the disciples have been following around Jesus, listening to Jesus' word. Easy when he was with us. But his word still remains with us. How do we hear his word? Primarily, I'm going to wave my phone, which seems slightly ridiculous, at us through the Bible, because that's where my Bible is. Yeah? Are we listening to his word in the Bible to learn from him? But are we also listening in the other ways that we hear his voice, through each other, through preaching, through being together in a small group as we dig into what it means, the word means in daily life, through the Spirit's whisper inside us, and through other things that God helps other things to bring to us, prophecy and knowledge that we can't get in other ways, as we match that up with the Bible. Are we listening to Jesus? Okay, how many people are gardeners? Any gardeners here? One at the back. Okay, I'm a half gardener. Two. For most of us, we don't really understand what pruning's about. Most of us think of pruning as cutting off that big bush that's now falling over our drive and we can't get the car in, so we just get the shears and we hack it to bits to make it a bit smaller. But actually, pruning has a specific purpose, several specific purposes, and method to the madness. So we're going to have a look at what pruning is alongside what God might be doing for us in that pruning. I'm going to try and put those things together. So, when you start pruning, first thing you do is you get rid of the old woody growth that's no longer any good. It's been really useful, it's been fruiting, it's been a very important part of the tree, but it's no longer producing the fruit or the flowers that it once did. It's been really productive, but it's time for other things to take its place. Remember when I'm talking about pruning just now, I'm not talking about removing people, okay, because that was a little earlier bit in the passage, okay? I'm not saying some people are past it and we should kick them out the door, okay? But there's certain things that we do or ways that we are that maybe have become a bit of deadwood. How comfortable are we in how we do church, in how we come to God in our quiet times. Are we doing things just in a familiar way that used to be very productive, but now not so much? We're going through the routines. Perhaps we're relying on our own strength to do things because we've always managed to do it, so we know how to run a this or a that. And we're not really getting the sap, really getting the Spirit of Jesus coming through us to produce new fruit. So are there things that have to go? Second thing you remove is the diseased branches. And we might liken that to the sin that's in our lives, the selfishness that builds up in all of us. And is there something that Jesus is putting his finger on in your life, in my life, at the moment through his word that says, this needs to go? Next thing is trying to pick out the strong buds or the strong shoots that are coming off. Developing what's important for this particular time, or perhaps the strongest shoots from this year's growth. They're going to be able to hold up those grapes hanging down from them. And perhaps that's where the teaching about trials and suffering comes in. Because sometimes God does things in us that increases our endurance and our strength to be able to carry some fruit that perhaps is particularly difficult or heavy for other people. So God sometimes helps us and chooses us different branches than perhaps we would pick just because they're the nearest ones or whatever. But pruning is not about individual branches primarily. It's about shaping the whole bush. I have a rose bush at home that's trained up against the fence. And every year I have to cut off the branches that are sticking forwards or backwards or going through to the neighbor's side to make this beautiful shape, because the flowers, which eventually will become fruit, come off as new shoots off each of these branches. So pruning, when God's pruning us as a people, he's pruning us for the whole body, for the whole of us together to be fruitful. Sometimes there's a great big huge branch that's producing masses of flowers and lots of leaves, but it's shading the branches underneath and stopping them getting the light that they need to be able to produce fruit. So are we being people that feel we have to, as individuals, have to do everything ourselves? Have to be the one that's producing all the goodness? Or do we need to be cut back a little bit to allow other fruits and shoots to grow and to fruit so that we can be a whole vine fruiting together? And sometimes we, in that shaping, we cut off good bits, really good things. I know that bit would produce good grapes, but it's in the wrong direction for the whole vine. Yeah? And sometimes we have to cut back on some things that we do so that we can allow the whole direction to go in the way God wants us for this time. And then finally on pruning, sometimes there's renovation, where the gardener comes along and they cut back nearly everything back to the main core, back to the main stem. For us here, that's back to Jesus. Sometimes we need renovated, and the pruning can be quite harsh, or feel at the time quite harsh. When I did that the first time to my climbing rose, I thought I'd killed it. But it's now stunning to come out. So do we need restored? Do we want to be changed, to be pruned? What is Jesus pruning in us, or need to prune in us at the moment, individually or as a church? Have a moment to think about that. I'll be more time at the end, just before we move on. Okay. If Jesus had stopped at pruning, especially if we're thinking about pruning that's just about getting rid of sin, and I hope you've seen that it's much more than that, we might be left with the impression that being a disciple of Jesus was just about following rules and standards, something quite dry and mechanical. But Jesus moves from pruning to remaining. And this, apart from Jesus being the center of the vine, is the heart of what he's doing when he's changing this image of the vine. See, a branch is about something organic, living, vital connection to the vine. And being a disciple of Jesus is about a vital, pulsating relationship with Jesus and by connection with the Father, the gardener. It's so complex that we don't even have the full language to grasp what it means, or the image. It sort of goes round and round in circles, and it does, doesn't it? If you put your hands together, you're curling them round and you're remaining together. I forgot to read the verses, so we're going to read the verses now, and then we'll look at it some more. Verse 4, it says, "Remain in me, and I also in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me." Jesus uses these words even to talk about his relationship with the Father and the Spirit. I in you, you in me. And then he brings it to us, even last passage. I am in the Father, and you in me, and I in you. Something intimate and deep and almost so connected you can't see the join. And our English words, we haven't got one that works. Remain I've used here because it's easy to imagine. We've got to stay connected. But the ESV and other translations use abide, to live in, to live with, to be dwelling together. Are we doing that with Jesus? So, how do we remain? How do we actually do that? I'll tell you that bit in a minute. jumping ahead. I wanted to spend some time here thinking about how we do relationship with Jesus, how we trust him, how we spend time with Jesus in quiet times. But I came up with this little sentence popped into my head, and this is what I want to say here mainly is, are you trusting Jesus enough to let yourself have time to know him? Are you trusting Jesus enough to let yourself have time to know him? To take time out of the busyness, to take time out of the to-do list that will still be there when you come back, but maybe he'll have reprioritized it, to sit and have time with Jesus. Or to be practicing the presence, as you've heard people say, of talking to Jesus about every bit of the day and finding him in the mundane, in the ordinary things. Verse 9 also says, "As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love." Do we allow ourselves to relax into Jesus' love? And just to sit there and let ourselves know the knowledge of Jesus' love. How many of us are running on empty? Our connection to Jesus quite tenuous, and we're trying to squeeze out the fruit that we can muster with our own strength on weary branches. Are you trusting Jesus enough to let yourself have time to know him? Apart from me, verse 5, you can do nothing. But that's not what Jesus talks about here. So I tried to keep that really short. I think it was important because it was kind of assumed. Jesus doesn't say, have a long quiet time with me to remain in me. He says something completely different. Have a look at verse 9 and 10. Verse 10, actually. What does it say? if you can keep my commands, you will remain in my love. Let that sink in for a minute. How do we stay connected to Jesus? If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love. There's something to do here in how we remain in Jesus. And it's not even directly for Jesus. It's not saying that's how we become connected to the vine. Jesus does that. Okay, it's not do all these things and God will like you better. But part of being a vine is about loving other people. And he distills his command here. He has many things he tells us. Verse 12 and 13. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for one's friend. Following Jesus is not a solitary pursuit or just a spiritual experience between you and God or just what happens in our quiet time or our church service. So have a look around. Have a look around at each other just now. I know that's not normal in a sermon, but yeah, you might get a shock as well. Have a look at who's here. Have a look who's not here. Have a look at the people that you know, the people that you don't know. What does it look like to love one another here at Hillview? It requires intentionality, our choice and our actions, but it's not in our strength. Apart from me, you can do nothing. But a bit like I've seen birds flying. Lots of little birds flying around at the moment. Sometimes they're joined by another one. And as they fly, they just follow each other's every move, don't they? Jesus is on the move, like Aslan in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. He is loving. He wants. He knows who people are. He knows what they need are. And we need to join in with him in what he's doing. And we need to start. Almost as we start loving, then Jesus catches us into what he's doing. Gives us the strength and the need. If you've been on mission, that's when we grow often. Yeah? When we start, I'm going now. I don't know what I'm going to do when I get there, but I'm going now. Tim's doing that. And as we go out to love, we start to follow the command, we find that we're flying with Jesus and following him, perhaps in ways that we don't expect. Jesus gives us two models here of what love looks like. Verse 13, onwards a little bit. I'll read a little bit and then we'll talk about it. The two models. Let's go back to 12. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. There it is again. I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. I have called you friends, for everything that I have learned from my Father, I have made known to you. So he gives us two models: self-sacrifice and friendship. In many other countries, self-sacrifice might be the ultimate sacrifice of life for one's friends. It's not usually the case here. But do we love each other in a sacrificial way, a way that costs us? Not just the friends, the people that we get on with that are like us, that think the same as us. But do we love by giving our time, our energy, giving up some of our likes? And Jesus also talks about friendship. It's curious, isn't it? Even in his authority as the one that gives us commands, he says, I've called you friends for I For everything I have learned from my Father, I have made known to you. Even in his authority, he comes as a friend to share everything with us. And as we follow Jesus as our model, as the one we're following, is that how we relate to one another as friends? And friendship, like remaining in Jesus, takes time, doesn't it? To be a true friend, to do life with one another, to be vulnerable to one another, to share truth of ourselves that maybe we hide from other people so that other people can love us, to be forgiving because we get it wrong. I get it wrong so much. To be forgiving and to be in the mess of everyday life. And yes, to be challenging to each other as we spur one another on in what it means to be followers of Jesus. So what was the purpose of the vine? To represent God to everyone else that's not in the vine out there. What was the purpose of the branches? To bear fruit. How do we bear fruit? By remaining in Jesus, in close relationship with Jesus, which means loving each other. But the purpose of the vine was to bear fruit. And fruit is not for us. It's not for the vine tree. It's for the people that are not in the vine. So lastly, we're going to come to fruiting. Verse 8 says, "This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples." Another verse that says, "They will know my disciples by your love for one another." I said near the start, our fruit was our Jesusiness. All the characteristics and actions and our priorities should be recognizable as being like Jesus. So if we're wondering what that is like, what does it mean to be like Jesus? I'm going to give you some homework. I told you I was a teacher. Because that could take another several sermons. But I don't know if you ever go home on a Sunday afternoon and flip through things that have suddenly sparked in your brain. Look for other things. Maybe look at what Jesus was like, his actions, his characters, his priorities in the Gospels. Just flip through page by page. Don't read every verse. Look at the headings. Look at the stories that you know. And look and see, what is Jesus like? How does he treat other people? Look at the passages about fruit. Galatians 5, we studied it here. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, faithfulness, goodness, and self-control. Is that what we're showing to the world? 1 Corinthians 12 passage about love is patient, is kind, doesn't boast, doesn't keep a record of wrongs, rejoices in truth. It also looks like answered prayer. Several passages in several parts in what we've read today. Verse 16, middle of that. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you might go and bear fruit that will last, so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. Fruiting looks like answered prayer. As we become Jesus-y, as we pray for things that Jesus would have asked the Father for on this earth and asks now, the Father is delighted to answer. So what does it look like to be a follower of Jesus? It looks like being in a vine. What's been the most significant thing that you've heard or I've heard this morning? Is it that we need to be branches? We need to be connected and fruiting. And if you don't feel that you're part of that vine now, remember, God is an excellent grafter to graft us in. What's been the most important thing? Is it that God is pruning you. Maybe things that you haven't understood, you realize now God is pruning you for greater fruitfulness. Or maybe that you realize there's something in you or us that needs to change, that needs to be different. How is God wanting to shape us? Because it's not about our ideas. Are you remaining surrendered into Jesus? Are you giving him time? And are you following his command to love each other in sacrifice and friendship? And are we fruiting? How Jesus-y are we? Are we representing Jesus and the Father to the world? I'm going to finish with verse 16. I read it a moment ago, but I'm going to read it again. You did not choose me, but I chose you. Well, we've been talking about what we do. Jesus chose us. And appointed you to that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command. Love each other. Amen.